Well, this morning, again, we want to return to our look at that subject I have entitled, The Breastplate of Many Colors. It is taken from the breastplate that the high priest wore, and the thing that probably caught your eye the most would be the 12 bright colored stones, each one different, that was placed on this breastplate. There were four rows of stone, three to a row, and on each stone was inscribed the name of one of the 12 tribes of Israel. And as you recall in this series now, we've been into it for quite a while, is that from the book of Ephesians, Paul talks about another breastplate. In the Old Testament, the high priest wore the breastplate of judgment. And in the New Testament, Paul says we are to put on the breastplate of righteousness. And righteousness consists of all of God's judgments on what is right and wrong. And if you build into your life right and wrong judgments, then you begin to develop righteous character. And so it was my idea that there could be a connection between the 12 stones and 12 character traits that you would have in the breastplate of righteousness that Paul said that we ought to put on. So we would need to know what are the desirable character traits that God would like to see us put on or put on our life or into our life or develop and cultivate, because all character traits must be learned. They must be built into our life by determination, by planning, by study, by effort. You're not born with these character traits. They must be developed and they must be maintained. And so we're going through the names of the boys found on the breastplate of the high priest. And we're now down to that fifth son of Jacob. And you recall Jacob is nearing his death. He calls all of his boys, 12 of them, into his presence and begins to give a prophetic blessing to each one of the boys. We are now down to that fifth boy, and we'll look at the story of his few verses from which we get, hopefully, a glimpse of something we can say would be a good, desirable character trait for all of God's children. You remember, Jacob starts with his firstborn son, and then works his way on down, and he begins to jump around eventually, not going in the order of their birth. First of all, there was Reuben, and from studying him, we find the character trait that God would like for us to have would be stability. That is, steadfastness. Once you start something, stay with it until you finish it. One of the problems we have in the church, we have so many starters and so few finishers. And the basic problem is there's no character trait developed called stability. We don't stick to it. So the second one was Simeon. And you remember the character trait, if you heard that message, was self-control. That's one of the fruits of the Spirit that we have mentioned in Galatians. Then was Judah. The character trait we learned from him was fortitude, or courage, or boldness. This is also required if we are to walk with the Lord, to take a stand and to be bold and courageous, to do and dare and exercise faith. Now, last time, we took the boys who was named Zebulun. He was the 10th boy. So Jacob jumps a number of boys in between Judah down to Zebulun. And from him we found that the character trait that would be desirable for us would be that of being industrious. Industrious. Hard worker. A servant needs this character trait. Now we come to our fifth character trait, and this will be the next boy in line that Jacob prays over. He's actually son number 9. Now, when we talked about Zebulun, he was son number 10. Now we back up to son number 9. Now, so far, all the boys that we have studied have been sons of Leah. As you recall, when Jacob first got married, he thought he was getting Rachel. That's the one he wanted. The father-in-law tricked him, and he ended up marrying her sister Leah. Did not want Leah, and I assume he really never did love Leah and did not admire her. And I believe she loved him. And the only way she could figure out to gain his love would be to give him sons. And so that's what we have so far. She's given him a number of sons. 4. Now, Jacob still did not love her. He still gave most of his attention to Rachel. It seems that somewhere down the line, Jacob even stopped going to be in the tent of Leah. I guess there was two different homes, you might say. One, Rachel's tent, and the other was Leah's tent. And Jacob, I guess Rachel told him, lay down the law, you can't go back and see Leah anymore. And Jacob must have been a pretty weak person, or he really didn't care much about Leah at all, because he seemingly agreed to this. And so there would be no more chance for Leah to have children if Jacob refused to come and live in her tent with her from time to time. Which brings us down now to the story of our next boy. Kind of an interesting story. You may know it. Remember, Reuben now was the firstborn boy of Jacob and Leah's firstborn child. He was probably about 5 years old now. Reuben went out in the days of the wheat harvest. I'm reading from Genesis chapter 30, verses 14 through 18. Reuben went out in the field during the time of wheat harvest, and he found some mandrakes growing in the field. He brought them to his mother, who was Leah, and Rachel saw the boy coming to his mother's tent, saw what he had in his hand, and saw him go into the tent of his mother. And Rachel wanted these mandrakes. And so let's read the story. And Leah said, Rachel said to Leah, give me, please, I beg of you, I'm kind of paraphrasing this for you, please give me those mandrakes that your son just brought to you as a gift. And Leah answered, why, you have, I'm paraphrasing this now, can you please understand this? You have taken my husband away from him. You have forbidden my husband that he won't even come into my tent. Do you desire to take from me this gift that my son gives me also? Will you take from me even his love? And Rachel said, okay. If I let Jacob come and stay with you tonight, will you give me the mandrakes? And Leah agreed. And Jacob came out of the field that evening, not knowing what had been taking place between his two wives. And Leah went out to meet him. Maybe Rachel always went out, but this time Leah went out. And she said, tonight, old boy, paraphrase, you're going to come home with me, and you're not going home with Rachel. And sure enough, she said, I have secured the rights to you by giving Rachel mandrakes, which my boy Reuben brought to me. And Jacob did not put up any kind of argument. He went along with the agreement. And that night he spent with Leah. Guess what? God hearkened unto Leah. Undoubtedly, she had been praying that God would give her Jacob's love. To do that, she felt would require that God would give her another son. And she did conceive, and she gave Jacob a fifth son. And Leah said, God hath given me my hire, because I have given my maiden to my husband, and she called his name Ishkar. Now, the mandrake is kind of a strange kind of a, I don't want to call it a superstition. Maybe it's home medicine remedies, you know, a home cure. It was a red and white flower. It was, as far as I can understand, quite attractive bloom. And Reuben is not interested in the root. Now, the root of this flower is what would be interesting to Rachel. But he pulls up the flowers, and up with the flower comes the root. And it was thought in that day that this root, I guess it boiled or eaten, I don't know what you did with it, it had some medicinal power. And that is, it could make a woman who had not been able to bear children, make it possible for her to bear children. A birth enhancer. That's, I don't know what you would call it. A fertility root. I don't know much about this plant. But anyway, that was the thinking in that day about the root of this flower. And she makes this bargain to get those flowers and those roots from Leah. Go home and make her a brew, I guess, and take it. And then when Jacob came back to her tent, that she would then be able to bear children. Because so far now, Leah, you know, has four. She has none. And Leah is going to be pregnant again and have number five. And guess what? The roots don't work. The flowers don't make a bloom on the cheeks of Rachel. She ends up still barren. But Jacob gets his fifth boy from Leah. Issachar. His name means reward. That's what she said. His name means recompense. His name means wages. And so Leah was saying to, in the name of this boy, I have been paid a good reward. That's his name now, reward. I have been paid a good reward for my deal. I have been paid good wages. That's another meaning of the name Issachar. And in a sense, you could say, I have been recompensed for my business transaction with Rachel. And recompense is, again, a meaning of the name she gave the boy. So now let's move on to later years in life when Jacob brings before him this son, Issachar, and prays the prophetic blessing over him. Genesis 49, 14 through 15. I'm going to read it as you find it in the King James Bible. And then I'll give you my paraphrase of what I think the verse means. First, from the King James. Issachar is a strong donkey crouching down between two burdens. And he saw that rest was good, and the land that it was pleasant. And he bowed his shoulder to bear and became a servant under tribute. Now remember, we're trying to find a character trait by examining the meaning of the boy's name and what is said about him by Jacob in this prophetic prayer. Now I'm going to give you my paraphrase of this. Issachar is like a strong donkey loaded down with two saddlebags. When he saw how fertile the land was, he willingly put his shoulder to the plow and paid taxes to the inhabitants of the land. Even though I have given us a paraphrase, the question still remains, what is the character trait that you can get out of that? Now, we're clearly told that Issachar was given fertile land. Actually, it was land that was good for growing wheat. And this tribe would become expert farmers. So with that seemingly fairly clear that this would be the occupation, this would be the income potential of the land that was chosen by Issachar, that he would be a farmer. Now, we don't find anything bad said in the remainder of Scripture about this boy. We don't find anything bad said about this tribe in the Bible. Now, he is, again, pictured as an animal. Now, we had Judah pictured as a lion. This boy is pictured as a donkey, carrying two saddlebags, which are loaded down, which means he is carrying two burdens. What are the two burdens? This is open for speculation. And so you might say one guess is about as good as another, and I'm going to make my estimation as to what I think the two burdens were. Have you ever been in a situation where you are burning a candle at both ends? Or if somebody has said you have too many irons in the fire. I never knew where that expression came from. The other day I read in the olden days when women did not have electric irons, they would have three or four, I guess you'd call them iron, I-R-O-N, iron irons, the old cast iron irons, and they'd put these in coals of fire, and they were in a hurry, so they didn't want to wait to reheat the iron, so she'd have three or four there. And as one cooled down, she'd grab another one out of the coals, and she'd iron with that, and if not one cooled down, she'd grab another one, and iron with that. And the only problem is that sometimes the iron got too hot in the coals. And when she put it on the garment, it, of course, burned it. And they said, well, you just had too many irons in the fire. You couldn't get the irons out of the fire fast enough to keep from burning up the clothes. And so do you ever feel like that's the situation in which you find yourself? Going different directions at the same time, too many irons in the fire, and burning your candle at both ends. I believe that's the situation that we find Issachar in. Now, his main interest, undoubtedly, was farming. Growing wheat, plowing, sowing, and harvesting. That would be his desire. That would be his interest. That would be the thing that he would want to pursue in his life. And so he would enjoy what the Bible says, bowing his shoulder to the plow to farm the land and to raise the crop. And if he was left alone, then that is what he would do. But it seems he has two different kinds of interference. He has two things that burden him and stop him from doing that which he feels like is most important, what he needs to do. All of us sometimes have something we really feel like we need to be doing, but we are having mental burdens, or physical burdens, or financial burdens. We have a lot of burdens that keep drawing us away from doing that which we feel like, man, I've got to get to this. But I have so many things pulling at me, so many other kinds of burdens that I have to cope with, and I don't have time to get back to doing what I really need to be doing. And this becomes very frustrating in our life. It's this kind of situation. Now, what are the two burdens? Let me tell you what I think they are. The first burden was that, as you recall, when the tribes of Israel occupied the land of Canaan, they had to drive out those who were already living there. They had to go into battle. They had to conquer the land and either kill their enemy, drive them out and keep them out, or make them subjects, make them servants, make them pay tribute to live in the land that has been conquered. And when these enemies sometimes attempted to attack a tribe in Israel, the call would go out to the other tribes, come and help us, we are being attacked. It's like when you see these Western shows, you know, and the fort's under attack by the Indians, and somebody sneaks out and goes and tries to find some help from the army and bring them back. The same kind of situation prevailed in the land of Israel. As one tribe was attacked, they would call for somebody to come and help them, especially those nearest neighbors, those tribes nearest to them. And it was expected you would drop what you were doing, because the battle's not going to wait, you know. You've got to stop what you're doing and strike out and take your armor and go into battle. And this was something that was common. This was a burden that was faced by each tribe. Some accepted the burden and some shunned the burden. Ishkar had character. And so he, when the call came, would go and help his brethren. 1 Chronicles 7:5. The total number of men available for military service from all the clans of the tribe of Ishkar numbered 87,000 stout-hearted warriors. This is the Living Bible. And then Judges 5:13-18. Down from Mount Tabor marched the noble remnant. The people of the Lord marched down against great odds. There's the battle now. They came from Ephraim. These are tribes. They came to help, see. And they came from Benjamin. And they came from Zebulun. Down into the valley of the Cain. Out also went the princes of Ishkar, and there's a boy. He was there too. With Deborah and Barak, at God's command, they rushed into the valley. But the tribe of Reuben refused to come. And he asked the question, why did you, Reuben, sit at home among the sheepfolds playing your shepherd's pipes? Yes, the tribe of Reuben ought to have an uneasy conscience. Why did Gilead remain across the Jordan? Why didn't they come out? Why did Dan remain with his ships? And why did Asher sit unmoved upon the seashore? Other tribes that did not come. At ease beside their harbor. But the tribes of Zebulun and Naphtali dared to die upon the fields of battle. But including that, now you see, you find that tribe of Ishkar was also there. Now, they were paid no wages for this. Remember, that's his name. His name is Wages and Compensation. And he got no compensation for this. He got no wages for this. He got nothing for his services, but just the satisfaction of knowing that he helped those who were in distress and danger at the time of need. Now, a donkey was the animal of choice to carry burdens, and it still is. You just think of a pack mule in some foreign country, and you got an idea of what the burden of the donkey is for, to carry the burdens of other people. So Ishkar found himself making life easier for other tribes. He was helping carry their burdens, but it didn't bring him any profit. Didn't bring him any wages. Even though he shared in carrying their burden of war, it didn't help him. Now, he did not shrink from the difficulty. He did not shrink from danger or from hardship or from the inconvenience or the cost that went to him. He fulfilled his obligation. But keep in mind now, his name still is reward, and his name means wages, and his name means recompense. What is Ishkar getting out of all this? Well, if you want to be honest, nothing. See, really, nothing. Now, that was his first burden. He needed to be home farming because crops are not going to wait. He needed to take care of his business at home, but he was continually being called away. He was not getting the wages and the profit and the recompense and the reward he could get from farming because he was fulfilling the burden of somebody else. And that didn't make life easier for him and his families in that tribe. The farms were going unattended. The fields were left unattended. And that's not a good way to have reward. The second burden was his own living conditions. Now, you know the name of Canaanites, but not all Canaanites, which would be the enemy, not all Canaanites were aggressive warriors. Some were experienced merchants. And so the land that was given to Ishkar was occupied by Canaanites who were primarily interested in the same thing his name meant, reward and wages and recompense. They were merchants. They wanted to look at the profit that they could make. That was their interest. And so the Canaanites really were not too interested in doing the battle with Ishkar's tribe. They would much rather agree to live in peace and rest and allow the tribe of Ishkar to use their land, only they would have to pay them tribute. That is, rental for the land they use. We would call it maybe taxes. Call it rent. Whatever you want to call it, it was a burden because it required that they pay the Canaanites money. Now you got cattle burning at both ends. You're running off doing war for the other tribes, which means you can't farm your land. You got the Canaanites saying, hey, we want our tax money. We don't care about your wars. And so they were the burden of taxes, paying for the use of the land. And there was a burden of running off all the time and fighting the battles of the other tribes. And they didn't have time to take care of what they really needed to take care of. So they found themselves between a rock and a hard place. Trying to be good farmers. Trying to be good neighbors and pay their taxes. And trying to be good friends and help the enemy. And you can't do all three at one time. And so their life became rather frustrating. This brings out now the character trait that I very in. The character trait is the question, when will we ever get free, oh God, to do what we want to do, what we need to do? What can we do about this situation? And the character trait that this tribe exemplifies is that of patience. Be patient, your reward will surely come. Be patient, your wages will be paid. Be patient, there will be recompense. Just be patient, Ishkar. God will change things and bring about to you that which you desire. No one is spoken of as having more patience than God. And there are so many verses I wish I had time to read about patience as one of the desirable character traits of the Christian. Until next Sunday, may God bless.